Before we know it, winter solstice is going to be upon us. The shortest day, you know, December 21st, shortest day and longest night of the year. So I dress in my winter solstice clergy garb, right? Pitch black, dark. I mean, I have colorful ties I could have worn. But no, I wanted to wear this today for this theme. Remember in pre-Christian times, the Norse people lit Yule logs to drive back the engulfing winter darkness. Plus Hanukkah and Christmas, both festivals of intense luminosity, they lie just around the corner. Then we move into Kwanzaa, the New Year's Eve and into the new year. Now, given the convergence of all of this, you'd normally be hearing a sermon on the wonders of light, right? I mean, I preach dozens of sermons on the wonder of light. I believe in it. And I could do it again, but this morning, I want to throw something off speed. It's not a nasty pitch. It's a tantalizing curveball, which every one of us is capable of hitting. Here's my Sunday pitch. Only when we dare to welcome and then embrace the blessings of darkness will we be fully grown-up religious travelers. The Western world is long overdue to come to grips with the blessings of endarkenment rather than always gravitating, especially during the days of December, to the philosophy of enlightenment. We need to befriend darkness in order to become whole religious people. You may be familiar with the ancient tale of the inebriated man on his hands and knees under a street lamp searching the sidewalk, and a friend comes by and says, "Ralph, what in the world are you doing there on your hands and knees?" "Well, I'm hunting for my house key," Ralph replied. "I lost my house key." And the friend got down on his hands and knees too and, "Show me where you lost it and I'll help you." "Oh, I lost it way over there in the grass," Ralph said. "Then why in the world are you looking for the key here on the sidewalk?" "Well, this is where the light is." This is where the light is. And I've got a strong feeling most of us come to worship, particularly during this season, the season of more depression than any other month of the year. Despondency. Because maybe we've lost something. Maybe we're not even sure what we've lost or where we've lost it, but we're convinced that a religious community might just be where the light is. After all, it's been proven that there are three main reasons why people come to religious communities: hurt, home, and hope. Hurt, home, and hope. We're looking for those. We're dealing with all of that. It's a reasonable desire. It's why I've stuck around in a religious community since I was a 9-year-old, and I wandered into a Presbyterian church in Southern California, and my brother along with me, and because we had friends there, and they let us play knee football in the front yard of the church. And my mom said, "That's good enough for our boys, it's good enough for me." She became a pillar, standard bearer of that congregation, stood tall for GBTLQ rights when the Presbyterians weren't behind it. And she said, "The proudest moment, Tommy, in your life was when you went to Selma." Pillar of that congregation until she died. We're all looking for sacred places of illumination and light and hope and home. Our grandson, who's 17 now, and next week, his name is Owen, and he got that from Owen Toll, right? And next week, instead of our driving him around to see the lights in the neighborhood, he's going to be driving us around. I don't know. Yeah. I'll be quiet. But he was about a 4 or 5 year old in a San Diego congregation, East San Diego, our Summit UU Fellowship there. Reverend Kathleen Green would occasionally meet with the young people. Terribly important that ministers spend time with the 5 year olds and the 15 year olds as well. They got to know and befriend and respect that person too. Kathleen was there, and they were making chalices in the kindergarten group then out of paper mache. I don't know. It was clay, paper mache, whatever you could find. And Owen had built a huge chalice. I mean, really large. And she said, "Owen, that's a large chalice." And he said, "Well, it's got to hold a lot of light." So it does. But during these holidays, I'm going to invite us to slow down and not rush to the lights only. We're prone to easy conversion of the holidays. It's getting darker and darker, and where's the light? Let's go out and find it. And we pay a price for our light binge. We grow lopsided whenever we embrace light and banish darkness. Because both realities are sacred and holy and deliver wisdom and meaning. Human existence is incorrigibly water and soil, masculine and feminine, sorrow and joy, light and dark. And our task is to explore the ranges of the entire continuum. As my tennis buddy, who since moved from San Diego when his wife died to be near a child and grandchildren in Texas, he used to say, "Tom, there's a yin and yang to everything." Using his Midwestern accent. "There's a yin and yang to everything." And so there is. To put it in more formal language, and there was evening and there was morning one day. You see, each 24-hour sweep is unified of a whole. Light and dark, day and night are merely different seasons comprising the entire mysterious reality we call life. We will never grow up fully if we only conduct our lives with the lights on. The treasures of the dark are many. Dreams emerge in the dark. Our earth came into being when darkness brooded over the face of the deep. Indeed, humus, from which our concepts of humor and humanness and humaneness and human and humility all sprout from humus, refers to the dark organic portion of the soil. We evolved from the darkness of our mother's womb. In addition to our own beginnings, ponder the births now of Joseph and Mary and Jesus this way as well. And we will return to the humus, dust unto dust, to the soil, to the dark, to the silent, to the serene, to the unknown. In mystery we're born. In mystery we live, and in mystery we die. And what about the stars, those natural, luminous, celestial wonders which filled the sky when the Nazarene was born and continue to do so every day and night of reality? And so a solstice comes in a few days. I implore us to seize some time. It won't be given to you. You got to seize it. You got to go and get it. Daily, a few minutes will suffice. We don't have to compete with the yogis or the monks. And sit in the dark, alone and quiet and still, consciously blessing all that grows in the dark. For the December dank and dark and cold, and we've had more of it for us Southern Californians. Climate change. And we're in the midst of it. Harbingers of a difficult time, but a time for more productive spiritual brooding and perhaps some action, but I'm talking about brooding today. In the midst of all the holiday hysteria, when everyone's romping around in commercialized frenzy, the solstice reminds us to slow down, turn around, come to your senses, find your mind, visit your soul, brood. Bless your day and your night. Winter is traditionally thought of as a low energy time. It's time, yes, of despondency and depression. But this dark season of the year, when we don't run from it, but we surrender to it, can be a rare time of internal renewal and deepening. Have you noticed in wintertime we can better hear the pounding of our hearts? For there's more silence all around. My mother died on March 4th, 2004. Actually, March 8th. Why do I remember? Because she was born on June 8th, married on July 8th, died on March 8th, and was memorialized on May 8th. And I told my life mate, Carolyn, I said, I need some time alone. And there was a call for me to be an interim minister in Grand Rapids, Michigan. And it was getting into fall, September, and I was there about 6 months during the cold winter time. If you're a Midwesterner, yes, there's snow. Last time I remember snow, 1951, as a 10-year-old, school was called off in L.A. You guys can go home and build snow people. I raced home, my brother and I, we built a snowman. Mom called us in for lunch, and I came out. Frosty was gone. I said to Carolyn, I said, I need some time to brood and deal with the fact of my mom's death. And she said, you got it. And I went to Grand Rapids and lived upstairs in a small little place. But I didn't use the car much. You know, who wants to drive around in the ice and snow and when you're not familiar with it? First day, even in the Midwest, first day of ice and snow, 187 accidents, bumpers and all that. So I stayed out of the car, but I walked the streets. I walked to work. I walked to visit people in the congregation. And I'll never forget the serenity and the quiet of walking at night in winter in the ice and the snow. Yeah, I could see lights and the colorful decorations, but the darkness gave me a gift and a blessing. Down, down, back, back, back. Use the season to connect with your core, with your essence, your dark, deeper being. It's a time for hibernation, for both the plant and the animal world. A quiet time, an inward time, a time of gathering energy, fresh strength as we bounce into 2020. We humans grow when we affirm the shadow side of our character, when we meet head on our inner demons, when we endure the dark sorrows that befall us. What is it that you might need to brood about or wrestle with in the silence and darkness of your solitary soul? Whatever it might be, I summon you to travel beneath the cheap glare of the season and dive deeply into the darkness. Probe beneath the blaze of the season and dive into the quietude of your being. Brood and reflect and ponder. Remember, it says that Mary pondered these things in her heart. She didn't try to explain them. She didn't try to debate what was going on in her life. She pondered. Brooded, soaked. Brood about what you plan to do with your one precious life. and your remaining years on our planet. Brood not to despair, but brood to cleanse and ground your being, readying your heart for a soulful response. Brood up, brood forth, brood onward. And oh, we have so much need to help our children with all this too, to better acclimate themselves to the insistent darkness that they feel and know. The shooting in Santa Clarita affected the children in San Diego and in Nepal, all over the world. Greta knows that. And others know it so well. As from the moment children leave the womb and enter daylight, think of that. Leave the womb and enter daylight, they experience an abundance of fears born of imagination and reality. And so we older ones that have been around the block a few years, we need to companion the little ones and help them confront their fears rather than be overwhelmed by them. We got our own physical and moral darkness as well, don't we? One of the nursing homes where I sing, the 28 residents live there and they're all ensconced in deep dementia, levels of dementia. Some are singing the melodies of yesteryear that they remember so fondly when I'm there with them, accompanying them. Others are dozing and others are smiling. Songs permeate the soul, you know that. They've tested it in homes where people have deep dementia and have not radiated even a smile for months. They pipe in the songs that are precious to them, and smiles start to occur often. And the doctors say, hey, our drugs can't do that. The music can, and I know that. And every time I'm there, and I'll be there again on Monday, tomorrow, and Howard's over, bent over like this. And I say, how are you doing, Howard? And sometimes it doesn't get through. But often he'll say, fine, I'm doing okay. And I said, are you ready for some music, Howard? And he said, bring it on. Bring it on. The darkness need not destroy anyone, young or old. It won't. Darkness does not destroy. Just as Moses saw Yahweh in the light and lived, so we can face the mysterious, scary, healing darkness and live and thrive. Remember Goethe's dying words about light, more light. And Unamuno, the Spanish philosopher, responded by saying, no, not more light, Goethe, more warmth. We die of cold, not of darkness. It's a frost that kills and not the light. But let's be honest. Sometimes life's emptiness and darkness seems overwhelming. And we get lost in it. Whether in our family or in the larger community, there exists a lot of hurting people who could sure use some CPR, a compassionate, personal response. Facebook's lovely, brings a lot of gifts that we didn't have. But I'm talking about face-to-face CPR. You know where it's needed. I know where it's needed. And if we need it, we've got to call for it. I want you to join me in finding ways these holidays to companion folks that are struggling. To help them not just with money or canned goods, both of which are necessary, but be willing to care and sing and serve the lost and the least up close and personal. Dare to touch those who are seldom touched. Dare to make visible those who are perennially invisible to human sight and care. Homelessness is real. So is depression. And so is death. Mother Teresa was asked, why in the world, after being a teacher in Calcutta, not a cushy job, but a really pretty stable position, you took to the streets of Calcutta? I mean, the least and the lost and the last. What were you doing out there? And Mother Teresa said, well, it was my duty. No, it was my joy. That's not quite it either. When I'm serving there, my joy is married to my duty. Where are you and I marrying our joy to our duty? Dark and light, joy and sorrow, service and serenity are yoked sacred forces, a yin and yang to everything. I want to close by mentioning a couple deaths of yesteryear. There are some that have been dear and close in the last couple months for Carolyn and me. Her best friend died at 68 and was supposed to be there for Carolyn's, who's 15 years older. And our cousin, 55, cancer. Jerry, who chose in a blessed way to end his own life with a proper support system and his wife's blessing. He said, I've had enough. I've done all I can be and share. My condition is such I want to complete it now. And that was occasioned, and that was 2 nights ago. It was Christmas Eve, 1987. Now, my dad was, we knew he was near death up in L.A. And we're in San Diego. He's in Pasadena. And I just want to share two or three things about it. I don't want to belabor it. Our son, who's now 58, and has lived on disability all of his adult life, was living with us at the time. And I'll never forget when I got the phone call from Mom, your dad has died at the Huntington Hospital. And Chris, our son, took me into his arm. We haven't had tons of precious connections, okay? But that was one of them. There are those moments nestled in all of our lives. Second thing is, I got in the car. Well, before I got in the car, I said, Carolyn, you take over the 5 o'clock service and you take over the 11 o'clock. I'm going to be with Mom. And driving up, all I could do amid the tears of joy and sadness interwoven fine, right? Tears come from a lot of places. Let them drop and water and grow something in the ground rather than always going to the hankies as I do still. I try to let them water the ground. Now, I was crying in the car and singing the holiday music, which Dad loved, because when he was a consummate provider, man of the Depression, who was never home at night because he was earning money to provide for the family. But on Christmas Eve, he was always there, singing banjo, guitar, Moshele on the ivories, Uncle Wilbur on the saxophone and violin, music in the house. And so I sang the holiday music with Mom. And the third thing is that I slept on the couch that evening, and and my dad's pajamas. I never go through the holidays, December, let alone Christmas Eve, without joy and sorrow woven fine in my life and paying homage to both of them fully as I can. Then a few years ago, our beloved sister-in-law, Sue Manley, died of a brain aneurysm, and this was sudden. Her husband heard her cry out in the bathroom, and that was it. At the age of 60, it was in mid-December, just as we were all readying ourselves. She was the spearhead of the holidays. She was the juice bringer, okay, for the manifold. She was a guiding spirit and light. Shocked, we surrounded her hospital bed where she lay unconscious. We wept and prayed, gnashed our teeth, and soothed her brow. We shook our souls in dismay while paying homage to her extraordinarily positive life. There was seldom a more consistently upbeat human being than Mary Sue Manley, sister, partner, stepmother, aunt, grandmother, colleague, friend. She simply epitomized our Unitarian Universalist faith at our finest. For she knew in the marrow of her soul that she belonged to a love that will never let us go. A love that will never let us down. And a love that will never let us off. And a love in my theology to which we return for the ultimate eternal embrace. Don't need to explain it. Don't need to debate it. It's sort of like Kate Wolfe. I was going to start actually with Kate Wolfe ballad, and I forgot it. 43, died of leukemia. Songwriter, give yourself to love. If love is what you're after, open up your heart to the tears and laughter. Oh, give yourself to love. Give yourself to love. She gave herself to love. And that's where we return as Unitarian Universalists. That's my faith. So it wasn't out of character. The very afternoon of Sue's death, most of our family and children included left the hospital where she died to attend Dr. Seuss's musical How the Grinch Stole Christmas. All about joy and sorrow. She had been instrumental in coordinating the specific excursion. She wanted to make sure we got there. And we felt her palpable presence throughout the play. In a profound and mystical way, the beauty of both darkness and light were married that afternoon as we mourned and reveled in this enchanting musical together. And so here's my prayer. May we be brave enough and wise enough as Unitarian Universalists to marry sorrow and joy, light and dark, quietude and service, and all the other yin-yang realities of existence. Marry them through the holidays. And if we get really brave and good at it, we'll be ready to take on 2020. And that marriage will come to fruition in the way that we live our lives and carry on our days and nights. Yeah, that's why this empty bowl here, this empty bowl, still has something left in it to pour. You and I have something left to pour. Keep pouring. Empty yourself. And we will be refilled And so will the universe that we cradle in common. Shalom. Salam. Blessed be. Namaste and Amen.